right now. Football stars, the big stars today, are paid in the millions of dollars, and a lot of them have lifestyles that reflect that, with multi-million dollar mansions and luxury townhomes. But according to our next guest, the Green Bay Packers of the classic 1960s era lived a more humble lifestyle, and they were part of everyday life in Green Bay.
Richard Ryman reports on the business and non-football news of the Green Bay Packers for the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network Wisconsin. He recently wrote about that period of the team's history. Richard, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So what prompted you to start looking into the housing that Packers had during the Lombardi era in the 1960s?
Well, these things kind of evolve sometime. I did a story about Jordy Nelson selling his house here, and it went over very well with readers. And so we started thinking about other things that we might do in Packers housing, and that sort of led us into a discussion of why the Lombardi Packers are this sort of mythical bunch of guys. And we decided part of it was probably because they lived, you know, amongst everybody. Green Bay is not so large that the Packers players don't still live, you know, close to everybody. You can't hide here. But they're much more in the suburbs, and, you know, they've got more money so they can afford to live in a little higher end places. The Lombardi guys were just next door to you. And we kind of thought that probably played a part in, you know, how they're thought of these days as well.
Well, I think part of the reason that this story is so interesting is because, as you said, the Packers in the 1960s lived in neighborhoods that were, you know, right next to kind of everyday people. And the houses, looking at some of the pictures that are included with your piece, they really do look like just standard middle class homes, not the mansions we might expect today. Can you describe some of those homes for us?
Well, they're like you say, they're just sort of the kind of homes you see in the older part of Green Bay. Ranches, primarily, 2 and 3 bedrooms. Some of them are just kind of little square places. Not really very special at all, though, you know, for the players then, we're kind of looking back on them, and, you know, they probably were better then than we think they are now. And some of them, like Jerry Kramer, built their own. So they were able to make them look like they wanted to, but they were just normal houses.
And was that because the players' salaries were just not as inflated or extravagant as they are today? What were they making compared to, say, their other neighbors?
Well, they were generally on par with the other neighbors. They may have been making a little bit more, I think. Bob Skoronski, for instance, his wife Ruth said they were making $8,000 when he signed with the Packers in the late 50s. Jerry Kramer talked about making $9,000, which I looked up like the average salary here, and it was in the $6,000 or $7,000 range in those days. But you're also talking about the players having to live in two different places often because they had to get jobs in the off season, and so doing that meant sometimes they would go back home. So $9,000 didn't stretch very far when you're trying to live in two different communities.
I think just that idea that players were, you know, having a job on the off season is just so foreign to us today.
It is. You know, you don't think about that very often, but like Carol Dale sold sporting goods equipment for a while, and Jim Grabowski, I think, may have sold insurance for a while, but, you know, they were all doing something in the off season. But it's surprising how fast it changed. I mean, the modern NFL that we're dealing with now came about really in the 1990s, but even by the end of the Lombardi area, Donnie Anderson talked about the fact that he didn't have what he would call a regular off-season job. He did a lot of appearances and corporate events and stuff that, you know, was an off-season job, but it wasn't like having to go to some place 9 to 5 every day. And he talked about making money in a range of $20,000 to $50,000.
Wow. So he, yeah, that was starting to get up there.
Right. And he came along, you know, before or was there for the last two Super Bowls, and Super Bowl money was pretty good.
Right. So the bonuses really helped bring their salaries up.
And Kramer talks about that. He said that was a discussion in the locker room amongst the guys that, you know, they were counting on this money, and that was part of their motivation to win championships.
So you did speak with some of the former Packers of that era, and I thought it was really interesting that depending on how the team was doing, their experience of living in the heart of Green Bay and among their fans could be a little different depending on, you know, the most recent score.
It did. It did affect the neighborhood a little bit, I think. You know, that Carol Dale talks about stopping at the gas station to fill up, and people would be complaining because they scored too many or too few points and ruined their pool. or the kids would get, you know, a little bit of harassment at school if they didn't play, if the Packers didn't play very well. Which Dale said, you know, it was good that they didn't lose very often.
I do think it's really interesting that you talked about kids. And, you know, like any kids, there were kids going to play at the homes of some of the Packers and Packer kids going to other kids' homes. And for them, it was like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, that my friend's dad plays on the Packers or is the coach of the Packers. But, you know, it's like, but what's really important is, you know, they have the best swing set.
Yeah, Carol Lacombe probably had one of the best quotes in the whole series. She went to school with Susan Lombardi, Vince Lombardi's daughter, and she said, you know, he was just some Packers coach. He was no big deal, which is awfully hard to reconcile from this point of view. But, you know, she was an eighth grader, seventh grader, and he was a dad. That was all there was to it.
Rich Ryman reports on the business and non-football news of the Green Bay Packers for the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network Wisconsin. And Rich, I think it's important for us to remember what the 1960s were like. There was a lot of racial tension, and of course, there were African-American players on the Packers who were living and working in the city before 1968 when the Civil Rights Act went into effect. What was their experience like, and what influence did Vince Lombardi have on that?
Well, they talk about Green Bay being a better place than a lot of places in the country at that time to be. But, you know, doesn't mean it was a great place necessarily if you were black. They had still to face a lot of indignities here. It's even small things that we might think weren't that bad, but having somebody come up to you and saying, can I touch your hair or can I touch your children's hair, because they'd never seen anything like mm-hmm. that. I mean, that's still pretty off-putting. And originally they couldn't rent in the city of Green Bay for a couple reasons. One is landlords did not have to rent to them because there was no Fair Housing Act, but also Green Bay didn't have a lot of apartments and things in those days, so the inventory was not great either. You know, they called it a strange but not menacing place to be. On the plus side, they had Vince Lombardi as a coach, and Lombardi was famous for being completely non-discriminatory. I mean, to him, Packers were Packers. That mm-hmm. was all that mattered. And when he discovered that some of the black players were living in really subpar conditions, he went to Dominic Olenicek, who was president of the Packers, and said, you know, we can't have this. If we want these good players to come here, we have to provide them places to live that are decent. And the word went out in town, and there were people and landlords who stepped up, and as apartments became available and houses became available, black players were able to get better living conditions.
And before we wrap up, Rich, I want to ask you about some of these houses that are still standing. Obviously, they've been bought probably and sold several times since this era, but there are people living in these houses now, and some of them didn't even know the history when they bought them.
Some did not. They found out afterwards. You know, a neighbor or a family member said, hey, do you know you're living in Henry Jordan's house? And they didn't know that. Others are well aware of it. The folks who own what was Vince Lombardi's house or Bart Starr's house, there's no escaping that. Unfortunately, fans can be a little zealous sometimes, and you know, they'll look out their door and see people playing catch on their lawn, or some of them have even been known to knock on the door and say, you know, can we come in and look around? So there is a downside to that too. But a lot of these houses still have some of those Packers touches in it, some of the things that the players did when they lived there. And if you're a Packers fan, and the majority of people in Green Bay are, I mean, that's sort of a badge of honor in the neighborhood or amongst your friends.
Well, Rich, thank you so much for sharing these stories with us. It's a really great, little peek into Packers history.
Thank you.
That was Richard Ryman, a reporter who covers business and non-football news of the Green Bay Packers for the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network Wisconsin. He was with us to talk about the lives of Lombardi-era Packers in the 1960s.